Ah, mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 261 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This is initially being released on Christmas, so if you're listening and you celebrate that holiday, Merry Christmas. If not, whatever you celebrate, may it be a great holiday season and may everything you want come true. This week I talk with artist Isaac Bell about his amazing art and the things that he creates, and he has a comic coming called Reverse Dark, which we talk about. We discuss how he got into artwork and what kind of things social media do for him. Of course, we list his websites and places you can check out all of his good stuff, so be sure to listen and look at those websites while you're listening. Then I broadcast the sound from 'Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas, a holiday tradition here at the podcast. As always, there's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Isaac Bell, who describes himself as a freelance illustrator who does comics, playing cards, other kinds of illustrations. How are you doing today, Isaac?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's good to talk with you, like I said. And I've been looking over your artwork, and one of the things that's bad about an audio-only podcast is that I'm not going to be able to show people on here what your artwork is. But why don't we start by talking about your website so people, maybe while they're listening to this, can look over some of your art there. How do you get to your website?
Okay, well, let's see. It's actually under construction right now, but I would recommend, I mean, my art is all over the interwebs. My recommendation is always just to Google my name, and all of my stuff comes up. All the social media sites, I have online portfolios. You can just go into Google Images and see tons of my work.
Now, why don't we start off by saying, though, of course, your name is Isaac, but you don't spell it the way that a lot of other people do. You have your own unique spelling, which, as I heard you say one time during an interview, that it helps people find you on Google, which I thought was a great point. Why don't you spell your name in any way that you can tell us how you got the unique spelling you've got?
Yeah, it's I-Z-I-K-B-E-L-L. And actually, when I was very young in school, I just started spelling my name in all kinds of different random ways just because I was a weird kid and I was different. So, and then I-Z-I-K just kind of stuck, especially I made my art signature I-Z. So I was basically stuck with that spelling. So
that's how it came about. Okay, that works for me because then we say letter something. I have this thing that I take my name Wayne and I crush the letters together all in one stroke, W-A-Y-N-E, all together in there. And the great thing about that is you cannot possibly duplicate it because nobody else but me knows how to do it. It took me a long time to figure it out too.
Yeah.
So it's something like that kind of helps it stand out. And that way, if I look at something and something says W-A-H, which are my initials, then I know I didn't sign it because I never use my initials. I always do that kind of crazy little thing.
Right.
So I can relate to that. So talk to me about being a freelance illustrator. As I heard you say on a different interview, you were talking about the fact that you get to many times sit around the house and draw, which always strikes me as that not many people can actually do that. You know, a lot of people have to go out and do other things or work for companies or something like that. Talk to me about being able to do those kinds of things. How did you develop like a following that allows you to do that and using of social media and things like that?
That's my life right now. I wake up, I get out of bed, and then I sit here and draw all day. And I wouldn't be able to do that if I hadn't have built a network through social media. And it took quite a while. You know, I guess it all started years ago. I basically quit my job just to focus full-time on art. And for a very long time, I basically had no income. I was living off of savings and, you know, it, just focusing on improving the quality of my work. And then little by little, people started noticing me on social media. So, and then I started building a network, and it's definitely not huge or anything like that, but I'm able to land enough gigs to keep me going and make a living.
Which is great. I mean, not every artist can do that. I mean, a lot of art people are struggling to figure out ways to do it. And a lot of people have to hold down a regular full-time job as an accountant or something like that in order to be able to afford that. And, of course, that's just, you know, I always am entertained when I hear what kind of work illustrators do in the workforce. It's never anything that's creative. It's always the dullest thing. And they wait to get home. And once they get home, boy, then all this creativity that's been pent up all day comes flying out. But you get to do that all day. That's the coolest thing.
Yeah, and before this, years ago, I always worked a full-time, just normal job, and I would come home just drained, and it's really hard to be able to do both. Mm-hmm. So now that I am able to focus 100% of my energy into being creative and making art, it's a huge difference, and very, very happy with how things are going.
And of course, if somebody goes to the website, you don't see everything. You're also on Facebook and on Etsy as well. So your artwork's all over the place. So if somebody's listening to this and you'd like to see what artwork Isaac does, check out those places. Look under Facebook for Isaac Bell and or Etsy, and you'll see his artwork. I really noticed that you don't tend to go for the standard look of things. I heard you say one time you're not interested in realism. There's that balance you have to strike, though, isn't there, between doing body parts and everything look like as if it's something got some foot in reality, but on the other hand, you do something that's a little unusual. How do you do that? Is that, and the creative process is something that always fascinates me. So how does that happen for you?
Yeah, definitely. There are certain things that are important, I feel, certain realistic aspects that are important as far as anatomy or perspective is a big one that I want to be in there. So when people see the work, they don't look at it and think that it's off or something like that, even though what I'm drawing is it's something you would never actually see in reality. Mm-hmm. So I think that the way I'm probably able to do that is there's a foundation that I begin with where I am thinking very much about how to make whatever it is, the pose or the perspective, to use technical methods to make that realistic. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I put all kinds of exaggerated muscles or designs and just an absurd amount of details and cross-hatching and that kind of thing.
That's one thing I have to say about your artwork. I used to think that George Perez put detail in until I looked at your art and I went, wow. George Perez is probably his hands ache just looking at your stuff. I think all they do. Is that important for you? Does that communicate something by putting all that detail? Because a lot of people do this stylized stuff, but yours isn't really stylized so much as detail-oriented.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of art that was always appealing to me. Mm-hmm. The artists I grew up admiring, they put all this detail and they were very exaggerated forms, and that's the stuff that I liked. And so in my own work, I always wanted to emulate that. So, and I see a lot of artists that do amazing work, and it's not detailed. It's just, it's beautiful stuff. I guess we all express ourselves in our own way. So,
well, I sometimes look at the Hulk and I wonder how he could possibly move. with the muscles the way they are. Because, you know, all these huge bulging muscles, he's going to be bumping into himself as he moves along and stuff like that. But then I was in a drugstore the other day, and out came this guy, and he looked just like the Hulk. And I looked at him, and I go, you know, you can't help but watch him as he goes around, because you're going like, how does this guy actually walk and stuff like that? He was perfectly normal because, you know, probably what happens is it builds up and you get used to functioning with that. But I wasn't the only one. We're all kind of watching him go by going, wow, how does he do that? My understanding is that I've seen on Facebook and stuff, you do artwork for gyms and stuff. So I assume you go to the gym quite a bit and stuff like that. Does it help you, you know, working with your own body and stuff like that, maybe being around people who exercise like that as far as drawing?
I don't think so. The anatomy stuff all came from studying photographs and other drawings. I have done work with gyms and stuff before, illustrations for them. But yeah, I'm not sure if that really has translated into helping me understand anatomy. Maybe it has. Maybe it has, and I'm just not as aware of it.
Did you study anatomy, or is this just something that you just took to it naturally? It was something that was, you know, it's the creative process and you understands that.
Oh, no, I understood nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, it definitely came from spending a lot of time. You know, I've been able to take some classes drawing actual people, actual models. Mm-hmm. That was a big help. And then, honestly, I spent a lot of time just getting pictures, photographs off the internet and drawing those. And those were the resources available to me. Mm-hmm. And that also helped quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Now, one of the things I know that you're big on are playing cards. And I understood, I was listening to you talk about the fact you like to draw on things. And you started drawing on playing cards, and people actually wanted you to start doing that, and they would pay you to do that. What was that like when you started to draw on them, and all of a sudden somebody wanted to say, oh my gosh, I like that. Can you do that for us?
Yeah, that was a big surprise for me. And I honestly didn't expect the reaction that I got from the playing cards. I started off, my original idea was I did horror characters mm-hmm. on the playing cards, and yeah, I got a great response from them, and that was actually kind of the beginning for me starting to make a name for myself online on social media. So I would post those cards in different horror groups, and people started to notice my work. Mm-hmm. So
that's cool. Now, which kind of cards do you use? Are these just regular poker cards or like gaming cards? What kind of cards do you prefer to draw on?
Yeah, they're actually just normal bicycle playing cards. So, yeah, nothing too crazy or special.
Oh, that's so interesting because I would never think of it. Most people, because, you know, they're usually like a shiny, glossy feel to them, so you can't really draw on them all that well. But somehow you got it all worked out, and it's turned out well for you. Glad to hear that, because somebody who comes up with something like that and it's unique, other people will come and say, oh, I like that. I wish I could do that. How can I buy them from you? So that's kind of cool that you did that. And it's just because you like to draw on things. That's how this started?
Yeah, I think it started really randomly. My whole life that's actually been kind of a problem, just drawing on things I probably shouldn't, but it worked out because now I get paid to do that. So
cool. Did you do that during like school? I mean, what age did you start drawing?
I started drawing very young, and I did do that through school, and that's when I would get in trouble for drawing all over my homework or not paying attention in class, just sitting there drawing. Actually, a friend of mine from high school, she told me that's what she remembered about me, was the teachers always getting on me for drawing on my homework.
See, and a person shouldn't be doing that to someone like that, because clearly you're creative in that respect. They shouldn't sit there and try to force you into a mold. If they see that you're art, they should direct you towards art things instead of giving you trouble with that, in my opinion anyway. But it still worked out anyway, because you really love to draw. And it reminds me, I saw drawings that Bruce Timm, who did Batman the Animated Series, did when he was a kid. And it looked very much like what I did. Unfortunately, I didn't develop the art talent that Bruce Timm has, because I couldn't draw if somebody paid me to do it. I'd spend a year probably trying to get something to look good. But I was so intrigued by the fact that he started off with a very simple thing that I was doing at that same age. But then as he grew, the whole thing, his talent kind of took over, and he was able to do all these wonderful things. Did you find that too? Were you doing simple art when you were a kid, and then it blossomed as things as you got older?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was definitely like that. I moved around a lot growing up, and we mostly lived in rural areas. And I remember there not usually being a lot of artists, other artists in school. And the stuff I was doing was not anything all that spectacular, but I was still generally like the guy who can draw stuff in class. So
I see. That's the thing. You probably ended up doing stuff in yearbooks. People had any little things that they wanted to get done, like a program or something. You might do a piece of art for their little flyer or whatever it was. But that's the kind of thing that you get known for, and that because you love to do it, you spend a lot of time at it. And your talent turns into, you know, like what the profession that you're doing now. So I think that's just the coolest thing. I'm kind of jealous of that, to be honest with you. I wish I could do something and make something look like something. And I have to say, one of the things I really like, because I'm a big Batman fan, I saw your Batman drawings, and I really liked them. I wish you could do Batman. One of the Batman books at some point. I think that would be cool. I saw that somebody actually had one of your Batman drawings turned into a tattoo.
Yeah.
How about that? What was it like when you saw that happen?
It was a huge honor that someone would want something that I made inked on them for the rest of their life. You know, it definitely was a big honor.
Well, that's the trick. You cannot be hesitant about something you're going to tattoo, because I saw somebody who tried to get one taken off and it looked pretty ugly. In the process, so you didn't want to talk to me about Batman, though. Is there something about the character that you particularly like? Because I seem to notice that you've done several Batman drawings.
Yeah, generally a lot of the stuff that you see me do a lot of is the stuff I'm posting. They're mostly commissions and stuff like that. So it's someone is paying me to do that character. So it's not always because it's my favorite character. But as far as Batman goes, I do love the character. But his aesthetic, just I'm in love with. For me personally, when they released the trailer for the Batman versus Superman movie, and they showed him in the huge bulky suit with the short stubby ears, and you know, he looks all mean. That's I love that aesthetic. So I really connected with that, and I do love drawing Batman. That's for sure.
Because I saw that drawing, I think the one you're referring to, that Superman's got his arms around Batman trying to wrestle him down or something. Batman's eye is blue, it's like a blue glow, and it's obviously the stuff from the movie, which, by the way, I adored. I loved that movie. People criticized it terribly, but I loved it. I thought it was a fantastic thing. But as far as that and the artwork and stuff, did you go see the movie?
I did, yeah, and I'm also in the minority who absolutely loved it.
Because I'm just kind of curious, as an artist, do you get distracted sometimes by, like, say, his costume? Is it easier to focus sometimes on the artwork than on the storytelling? Because you see that and say, I'd love to draw that, you know, as opposed to wondering what the story is going forward.
Oh, when I'm watching a movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I am definitely very visually stimulated. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when I see a movie like that with just incredible cinematography and effects, you know, I remember when I was watching it, my face hurt afterwards because I couldn't stop smiling from the beginning till end.
Huh. Isn't that cool? Because I know somebody who writes novels about TV shows, and he has a real problem watching TV shows. Because what happens is he notices things that he could write about. And so he ends up scribbling down, you know, notes about it in the hope that maybe they'll hire him to write a story based on something like that. So that's why I was kind of wondering if the same thing, if you see something in artwork, does it just sort of pull you out of the movie and you're like, oh, I love that picture, you know, kind of stuff. Instead of letting them think, oh, you probably don't, maybe the first time you don't do it, but maybe the second time you pay more attention to the specific art and stuff like that.
So, yeah, honestly, when I watch movies, especially like that, in my head I am always kind of thinking like, well, I would do it this way, you know, or they could do this or they could do that. But, you know, I think a lot of movies that I really enjoy, I enjoy them more for it's like they activate my imagination, you know, and then I have this whole other storyline for it in my head that has nothing, that's not actually in the real movie.
See, now I got to ask you something, because you've just brought up something I always wonder. As an artist, is there any writing bug inside you that nibbles every once in a while? Do you want to write stories as well as draw them? Does that work? You tend to do a lot of still pictures, but we're going to talk a little bit about, you've got some sequential art coming up, including a comic, indie comic that you're working on that I discovered. Did you it's hard to put it in words, because in your head, do you see these things before you put them down on paper? Is that the way you see them, or does it come as you're drawing them out?
Yeah. So for me, I know, especially in comics, classically, there are writers and there are artists, and they team up. Mm-hmm. For me, I just consider myself a storyteller, and they're all the same thing to me. That's all I want to do is tell stories. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely love writing. I have my own personal projects that I'm working on where I'll be doing all the art and all the writing for.
Mm-hmm. But That's so interesting, yeah. Because, you know, the creative bug and stuff, and the creative process is such that there are some people they only want to draw. There's some people they only want to, only can write. But I always think that that process of being able to put those two together is something that is really rare, but when it hits, boy, it's a beautiful thing.
That's true. That is true.
Now, before we leave, I want to leave Batman, but I was reading on Facebook, and I noticed there's another character in comics that you seem to particularly like, and that's Domino.
Oh, yeah.
So talk about Domino a little bit. What is it about the – well, maybe people who don't know, why don't you describe who Domino is and what it is about that character that you like?
Domino is a female character. I believe she was created by Rob Liefeld. I grew up with her in a comic called X-Force. Mm-hmm. And she's this very tough woman who doesn't take any crap. She has a large arsenal of guns and weapons. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with really strong female role models in my life. Mm-hmm. So in comics, I always really liked characters like that. I couldn't connect with the damsel in distress type character, mm-hmm. but the hardcore femme fatale type, I always really kind of looked up to. So, and she was definitely like that.
Do you remember the first time you saw her?
It was definitely an X-Force comic. Mm-hmm. And it was definitely, it may have been the first issue of X-Force.
Really? Wow. Because I'm a big Batman fan, and I remember the very first time I saw Batman. I was in my house, and I went down to the cellar, and there was an annual down there, one of those giants, you know, 80-page giants things, to how old I am. But I picked it up, and Batman was in England, and he had to protect this castle. So he built this glider out of wood, and he was wearing it on his back as he's flying around the castle. And, you know, Frank Miller one time said that he picked up a Batman comic, and he started to read it, and he fell in. Is the way he described it. And that's what happened to me. All of a sudden, I was in the UK watching Batman fly around this castle and stuff like that. And from that moment on to this, I've been a Batman fan.
Oh, yeah.
And so I always like that. And so I always wonder what it is that these kind of things hit with people. When did you finally, when did you notice Domino and she was like, oh, man, I like that character. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what's so great about comics or any form of media that creates that kind of immersion where you really do leave reality and you're, you know, enjoying this other world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely what made me fall in love with comics, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the great things about it is, you know, there are certain times that I can explain to people why I enjoy comics. There was a time in Justice League when Grant Morrison was writing it. And Batman and Superman were taking on, I can't remember the name of it, they were in disguise, they were white Martians.
Oh, okay.
And Batman's there, he's standing around doing something, we can't quite make it out. And all of a sudden, three of the white Martians disguised like superheroes are there. And of course, at that point, we don't know they're white Martians. And I'm sitting there going, watching Batman. All of a sudden, these three Superman-level characters are standing around Batman. And I'm like, oh, he can't possibly survive this. And the woman says, well, you know, now we're going to crush your bones to paste. Do you have any final words? And Batman goes, a few. And he describes what's going on here. He's been putting gasoline all over the place. And he pulls out a match. And, of course, the Martians, of course, the weakness is fire. He right. takes this thing. He takes the match. And the woman goes, well, that's a very interesting theory. And he takes the match and he puts it into the gasoline. The gasoline just shoots up into the air. And they're all going, ah. And Batman takes his fist and puts it in his hand. He goes, ready, he goes. I remember where I was. I remember the time of day it was when I read that. I just was like floored because I was so sure Batman could not possibly survive that. See, that's the kind of storytelling that it's just the greatest thing when it happens. So I like that stuff. Do you remember any books like that? Were there any stories that stood out to you that got you hooked on comics?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Actually, the thing that got me into comics, I was in second grade, and it was actually Marvel trading cards that had the characters on them. Mm. So we would all trade them, and I was just amazed that all of these different characters existed in the same universe, and they all had histories together, and there was this long continuity, and that was the thing that really got me. So I always had a really overactive imagination. I think I had my own world of characters in my head. So I really connected with that.
Really cool. Of course, imagination like that, the creative process, is just something special. It must be fun, though, to put it down on paper or whatever it is that you do. Which begs another question. Do you use paper? Are you computer? How do you make your drawings and things like that to sell? Are they cardboard? How do you do that?
Yeah, I'm actually a traditional artist, so everything I do is, well, it's basically on paper. It's a Bristol board, which is a nice, thick paper that is used for illustration. I do use digital for editing certain touch-ups and things like that, but I do prefer to draw traditionally.
Because I talked to Wendy Pini, who does ElfQuest, and she and I were in love with the undo function, because you make a mistake, you don't have to try to erase it or start over or something. You click undo, and the whole thing that you just made a mistake on vanishes from the screen.
Oh, yeah.
We were saying that was the greatest invention of all time. We don't have to start over again instead of doing those things. So there's good and bad to that, but you like using your hands on the actual physical stuff to make those things, sounds like.
Yeah, and there are definitely disadvantages to working traditionally. I don't have the undo button.
Yeah.
if I draw something out of proportion, I don't just adjust it, I erase it and redraw it. Mm-hmm. But also, there's just something about putting pen to paper that it's, I don't know how to describe it, but I do love it very much.
I don't know if you ever read Darwin Cook before he passed. He did a book called Solo, where he did all these little stories, and they never really asked him if it was really autobiographical or not, but he did this thing where he was taken to his grandparents' house, and they were going to give him golf clubs to teach him how to be a golfer, because the father or grandfather were golfers. And he got there, and instead the grandmother gave him all this art material, paintbrushes and paper and things like that, and he just was like hooked. You know, the golf clubs, they just completely vanished from his world. He took all these paintbrushes and paper and all these other things and an easel and stuff back home with him. And the golf was doomed at that point, because he was going to spend the rest of his life as an artist. Good for us.
Yeah, we're all very thankful he didn't take up golf.
It was just something special about that. So why don't we get into a little bit about the projects you're working on? I was listening. You were on the Canned Air podcast, and those guys are friends of mine. I've met them up in Ohio one time. And you were talking with them about a new project you're working on called Reverse Dark. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a book I'm working on for a guy named Patrick McNerney. So it's a sci-fi book. It's a little cyberpunky. I can't give away too much about the storyline, but we are planning on doing a Kickstarter for that.
Oh, good.
Or Patrick is. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to be finishing the art for the first issue, looks like next month.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's coming along pretty quickly, actually.
Wow.
So, yeah, he contacted me a few months ago about coming on board as the artist. And the more we talked, the more we realized that we were a good fit creatively. And, yeah, I've been having a blast working for him. He has a lot of very interesting ideas. He does a lot of research on the stuff that he's writing about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all his characters. There are little bits and pieces of his life in there, things that he dealt with growing up. But, of course, it's in this really fantastical kind of science fiction world where we get to go all over the place, different planets, different times. So,
oh, that's cool. I'll look forward to that. Now, that won't be the first Kickstarter you're associated with, because I was looking up that you were in a thing called Earthling Vegan Warrior.
Yeah. That's actually one of the first books that I worked on, and that was for, I'm probably going to get his name wrong. His first name is Dave. I know his first name is Dave. I worked on that for Dave. Mm-hmm. And
Dave Brink, according to the internet here.
There we go. Yeah. Thank you, internet. Yeah, that was a great project. I think I did 10 pages, something like that, for the first issue. And I also did some cover art. So he's a great guy. I'm hoping to do some more work on the series. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's not the only project you've been working on. From what I see, you were involved with something called Adam Zero. And unfortunately, I haven't seen these. Adam Zero, Sniper and Rook? Is that two different books or is that one book?
That's one book.
One book, okay. Yep. And so I haven't seen any of those. I'd like to see them. Were you doing internal art, covers? What were you doing for those?
So for Sniper and Rook, that book is by John Medich, I believe is how you pronounce it. Okay. And that's a fairly long-running series now. I believe it has around 10 issues, maybe more, out right now. Yeah. I did a small segment in one of the issues that I don't believe has been released yet. Okay. I think I did around 8 pages, something like that. Mm-hmm. So and that was interior work. Mm-hmm. Adam Zero, that was years and years ago. And that was my first ever published work. And those were, I did some pinups for them.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So you've had experience with this, but you've been doing like parts of stuff instead of a whole comic. Is that what your experience has been before Reverse Dark?
Yeah, Reverse Dark will be my first full issue.
Looking forward to that.
That's yeah, fun. It's exciting.
How big of a change is that for you? Because your artwork, even though it may be like what we call a still or an individual thing, there's motion or something happening in it, and you communicate that with your artwork. Now you're going to have to tell a sequential art story. Did it take some doing with that? Did you practice that? How did you get ready for Reverse Dark?
Yeah, it's definitely a big challenge. Patrick sends over the scripts, and I have to turn his thoughts and his script there into this visual thing on the page. Mm-hmm. So doing pinups and stuff like that is one thing, but telling an actual story sequentially is a whole other art form. So it's definitely a big challenge, but that's really where my heart is doing the sequential stuff. That's what I really love. So I'm really happy to be working on it. And I have spent a lot of time practicing that.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Of course, I'm making notes because I don't want to miss the Kickstarter when it comes out, because I definitely want to support this book and be able to see it when it comes to fruition, because it sounds like great stuff. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you too is, I understood when you talked to the folks at Canned Air, you were mentioning the fact that we talked about the fact that you've been around the house being able to draw and stuff, but you've actually started going to conventions, which is a whole nother experience. Of course, you get the whole conglomeration of folks, the fans, the and the people who kind of turn their nose up when they see your stuff. But then you also get the really great people who come up and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe how wonderful your stuff is. As far as conventions go, has that helped you? Because now you get the personal feedback and the interaction. What's the convention thing been to you as an artist?
Oh yeah, the convention scene has been just really, really positive. It's great seeing people face to face and seeing their reactions to the work. It's a lot different online, where sometimes it's hard to tell mm-hmm. what people are thinking.
Mm-hmm. How many conventions do you go to usually in a year?
Well, I'm very new to the convention scene. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing them for about a year now. I've done 5 conventions so far.
Oh, wow. Okay. What about 2017? Are you going to be going to more conventions in 2017?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll definitely be doing conventions from here on out. Mm-hmm. It's just, they're a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. They're great for me financially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sure. Just, yeah, they're just all around a good thing.
One of the things you can do at a convention that, say, a writer really can't, is you can sit and draw. Let's say you have a quiet period for maybe half hour or something. Somebody doesn't talk to you or something like that. And then you can sit down, you can start to draw, so you can be productive. Where if you're a writer, writing at a convention is really tough because you've got all this hubbub going on around you, and it's difficult to do it. But I have to be honest with you, I like to watch people draw. You know,
I do too.
I think some people could charge me to stand there and watch them draw. Because I'm always fascinated to see how you do it and what sequence do you do things and stuff like that. It'd be kind of fun to watch. Have you ever thought about doing, because I know that David Peterson, he'll do these online sessions where he's drawing or coloring or something. And we get to watch him do it. And I've been transfixed sometimes watching him do this stuff and all the detail he's involved with stuff. Have you ever thought about doing that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. And I'm definitely like that, too. I'm like you. I go on YouTube and I can watch for hours just watching people draw. But yeah, that's something I'm working on now. I'm wanting to do time-lapse videos and tutorials and stuff like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very smooth. Because your artwork is so detailed and so wonderful. I would love to take your artwork and show it to somebody who does no detail at all and say, can't you do something like that?
Well, it's interesting, too. I put all this detail in my work. Mm-hmm. And maybe someone who has a more simplistic style might not be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I could draw simplistic stuff and have it have the same effect that a lot of these artists with simpler styles have. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not sure what it is. It's something about the gesture and just the flow of their line work that they don't need all that cross-hatching and mm-hmm. and extra lines that I like to put in there.
I got to ask you, though, are you drawn to people whose style resembles yours? Are you drawn to more simple? Because, you know, I would imagine if you're a person who likes to draw a lot of detail, you probably don't look at other people's stuff who does detail. You're more interested in seeing something a little different than what you do. But, you know, it could be way off there. What kind of artists draw your attention?
It's one of those things where I don't know how to describe it. I just know it when I see it. You know, I think that's just how art is. Like when you see a piece that you love, it just hits you right away. And there's that automatic emotional effect that it has on you. Mm-hmm. So I do love really detailed work, and that is probably my favorite. But especially like with a lot of these manga style artists, mm-hmm. that they don't do a lot of rendering and it's mostly just line art, mm-hmm. and they do really amazing stuff.
See, I have to tell you, my very favorite artist so far has been George Perez, and he's the detail guy. I could sit there and I would love to get a magnifying glass and look at all the detail he's got in there. He said one time, and I got a big kick out of it, that they were doing these extra size comics, and he said that whatever they were going to have him do that, don't tell him that it's going to be that big, because he'd be spending days and days and days putting all the detail in all this stuff. He'd be so busy doing all that stuff. But that's why I think your artwork sings to me, too, because you've got that kind of detail in it, too. And I just find that so your imagination just clicks when you see all those kinds of things. At least it does in me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's funny, I got to meet George Perez for the first time at actually my first convention.
Oh.
After like seeing certain artists on YouTube, you never really know what to expect. And George Perez was just the nicest, most down to earth. Like, he's just a big sweetheart. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. You know, that such a great artist was still humble and down to earth like that.
Because, yeah, I tend to lean more toward the writing, editing, and I got to somewhat know Scott Snyder, who writes Batman a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And he is the most humble guy in the world. I always get a huge kick out of him. When I first interviewed him, he was really nervous. This was the beginning of the New 52, and his books, all the orders were starting to come in. They were huge, and he was like, I'm going to disappoint all these people, he's going. And I said, are you crazy? I said, the reason why they're so big is because we want to read the stories you're going to tell.
Yeah.
And so I always get a kick out of that. I always think sometimes the best people are the humblest, are the ones that he said that I read online where he talked about the fact that he missed so many nights of sleep because he was terrified that when the book comes out, people would hate it.
That's hilarious.
It's just something to see that. And yet, I haven't seen him do a bad thing yet. I loved all of his stuff. So for me, I think it's kind of cool that those people who worry the most sometimes probably devote themselves so much to it that they work super hard on it. And when it comes out, you can really tell when you look at the thing. It's like yours. It'd be impossible to estimate how long it takes you to do, probably, an individual drawing, because it depends on the drawing, all the detail you put in it.
Yeah. But
it's just cool stuff. Is there an average did you expect for a drawing to take you?
Well, that's definitely true. It really depends on the piece. Mm-hmm. For work stuff, I try to, if it's like an 11 by 17, I generally try to finish it in one day. which is usually around 10 to 12 hours.
Wow.
Which is actually pretty fast for me.
Wow. So I heard you say, and I thought it was kind of interesting, you said that some of the stuff that you finished, you still may never see the light of day, which is a sad thing. The moment I heard that, I said, man, you should do an art book. I've seen people do art books, and they've had all the stuff that they've done that maybe they haven't gotten printed yet, put it together in this art book and put it out, because I think people would buy it.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's another thing that's on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be cool kind of stuff. Now, I understand that you lived, because this is going to be coming out on Christmas Day, you live in Denver, which, of course, you probably have already gotten lots of good snow. So you're probably in the Christmas mood, or at least Denver's in the Christmas mood, as far as that goes. You were talking, I heard you say something about how much you like the creative community in Denver. And I have to tell you, when I think of Denver, I don't think of the creative community. So I'm just kind of fascinated. You said that you move around a lot. What was it about Denver that drew you there? Was it the community that made you want to go and live in Denver?
Yeah, that was definitely a big part of it. When I decided to focus on art, and I knew I wasn't going to have an income for a while. Mm. So I ended up living for about a year and a half in the middle of nowhere in Montana. And once things started taking off and I started having an actual legitimate income from my work, I started to realize, well, what happened was I started getting contacted by, well, an organization contacted me. They wanted me to do a show, like a gallery type showing. Oh. I realized that I couldn't do anything like that in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So I started looking at different cities. I looked at Portland and Seattle and Denver. And I had never been here before, and that, which was one of the appealing things to me. I tend to do that, just move somewhere crazy that I've never been before.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, I did a bunch of research and found out that there's a huge thriving creative community here. People here love their comics, they love their art. So yeah, it worked out.
Very cool, because there's nothing better to spur creativity than being around other creative people, I think.
Yeah.
So we can bounce stuff off and you can talk with them. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? What works better, do you think? So that's a great thing. That's nice. You've got a support group around you or people that can give you feedback the way that you want. That's just super duper. I never would have thought Denver was a place to have that, honestly. That's such an interesting thing.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly knew nothing about Denver. I had never been here. And so, yeah, it definitely worked out.
Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of, Isaac?
Well, working freelance, I constantly have, it's like every couple weeks, a couple of different jobs come along. And so, I mean, I'm sitting here right now, I'm working on some concept art for this guy's story that he's going to put on some t-shirts. Hmm. So it's lots of different stuff. I do like commercial logos and stuff for local businesses or businesses anywhere.
Hmm. So you can multitask. You can talk and draw at the same time.
I think I draw better when I'm not paying attention to what I'm doing for some reason.
See, the creative process, I'm just fascinated by it. I'm always gripped by how that happens and what goes on. Sometimes people, they can't be bothered by other stuff. They've got to focus solely on what they're doing. But for you, it's a different thing. It works better if you're doing something else and your brain's engaged on different levels. That is such a fascinating thing. Well, I love your art, Isaac. Someday I'm going to get you a commission from you about Batman, because that's my character. I'll have to get you some time to do that for me. And we'll get that done, because I really love the ones that I've seen that you've done of Batman. Have been fantastic, including the one from Batman vs. Superman. I just loved all that good stuff. So the other stuff's great too, very dynamic. So I highly recommend it. Your website is, I understand, is isaacbell.carbonmade.com. Of course, we've said you're on Facebook, all other good places. Is there one that you prefer above the others? Like if we wanted to keep up with what you're doing, is there one that would be better than the others?
Well, I post new stuff on Facebook every day. That's a really good one. Instagram is good. But we're working on a bunch of stuff right now. There's a new website in the works. We've been working on my store on Etsy. So I've got a good team of people that are backing me up now. Yeah, lots of good stuff on the horizon.
Great. Well, the thing to do is look for Isaac Bell. Remember, it's I-Z-I-K, which will help you in Google. And look for this wonderful stuff. It's terrific artwork, very dynamic, very powerful. So I'm particularly interested in the comic and any kind of Batman drawing that comes up. So, man, Isaac, keep up the wonderful stuff. Hope you have a great holiday season and very productive. And look forward to seeing more from you in 2017.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Wayne. I appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And now it's time for my yearly holiday tradition, the playing of "'Twas the Dark Knight Before Christmas." This video is actually available on YouTube. If you go to that site and look up "'Twas the Dark Knight Before Christmas," you'll find it there. It's from the folks who do I'm a Marvel and I'm a DC kind of videos, and there are plenty of them. I think this is one of their first ones. What you really need to know is that there are three voices. The first one is Alfred, second one, of course, is Batman, and the third one is Santa Claus. And it has an interesting holiday message that I like to communicate. So without any further ado, "'Twas the Dark Knight Before Christmas."
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Wayne Manor, not a sound could be heard, especially not laughter. There were no stockings hung and no tree filled with lights, not a single Christmas decoration in sight. Master Bruce in his costume, and I in my robe, were up late on the lookout for evils unknown. I missed Christmas, but he said he didn't have time. None at all ever since the tender age of 9. It saddened me watching him year after year, never taking in joy, only dealing out fear.
"I say, sir,"
I pleaded with all of my might,
"Master Grayson is having a party tonight. Master Drake and Ms. Gordon are sure to be there. Why not leave this bleak cave and enjoy some fresh air?"
"I've outgrown Christmas, Alfred,"
he answered each year.
"You can go if you want to, but I'm needed here."
I sighed and walked upstairs to turn off the lights.
"Merry Christmas,"
I said. His reply was,
"Good night."
I walked up to my bedroom, got under my sheets, and prepared to drift off into sweet, peaceful sleep.
Suddenly, a noise woke me up with such a clatter, I ran to my window for more on the matter. And what should my wandering eyes happen to find but a man in a sleigh with 8 reindeer... No, 9! I was off to tell Master Bruce what I had spied. The fat man in the sleigh was in for a surprise. But it was my surprise. He had beaten me there. Just how fast was this man who could sled through the air?
"Who are you?"
Master Bruce yelled, demanding to know. The fat man's belly shook as he laughed.
"Ho, ho, ho! Don't you know?"
he asked, giving his heels a click.
"Santa Claus, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle, Saint Nick!"
The Batman moved slowly, not wanting to harm him.
"Right, Santa. Let me take you back home to Arkham."
But the man disappeared. He was gone in a flash, leaving only some traces of old soot and ash. Suddenly, he was back just as soon as he'd left. This man was indeed quite fast in spite of his heft.
"I've come here in peace,"
said the man.
"Have no fear,"
Batman said.
"Then explain to me why you've come here."
The jolly man laughed.
"Christmas time is at hand. I bring gifts of joy to everyone in the land. The good people come to me with their requests for their heart's desire, and I do my best."
"I need and want nothing from you,"
Batman said.
"Go and take to the streets of Gotham with your sled."
The man in red snickered and gave him a wink.
"The person I'm here for is not who you think. I've no gift for you, though you've done much good, it's true. But the present I'm bringing tonight, well, is you. For when it comes to Christmas, you just disappear, and you leave behind all of the friends you hold dear."
Bruce said,
"Hold on a minute now. That isn't true. I give plenty of presents at Christmas. I do. Gifts of cash, food, drink, clothes, anything I can find. So then how can you say that I leave them behind?"
"Giving gifts is something for which you've had a knack. But the spirit of Christmas is still what you lack. Your gifts are all sent, none given face to face, and you've never even accepted an embrace. If you're given a gift, you just turn it away, denying your friends what their hearts want to say."
"I know all of their feelings, and they all know mine. Gifts are simply a symbol for which I've no time."
"Well, Christmas is a time for which I've always felt. Allowing others in. Let your defenses melt."
"My defenses are fine."
Batman furrowed his brow.
"It's just a sign of weakness to let them go down.
Santa sighed.
I have never, as long as I've lived, had to teach 'tis better to receive than to give. I came here to open up your heart and your mind. You're determined to keep them both closed up, I find. You're just too filled with anger and pain and regret. Probably about both of your parents, I bet. You'd tell them you loved them if you could somehow, just like all of your friends want to tell you right now. Oh, the gift of allowing love to be expressed is one of the greatest gifts that one can get. For the past is behind us, the future unknown, and the moment is all that we have to call home. And so now I leave you with this to think on.
And with that, this St. Nicholas fellow was gone. The master was silent. He was lost in thought. I wondered if this was what that fat man sought.
Alfred,
he said sharply, giving me a fright.
You mentioned something about a party tonight.
Soon we were dressed and ready and out on our way. Surely this was a miracle, one had to say. He had come bearing gifts and was going inside when he stopped to look up because he had spied that Santa Claus fellow,
I exclaimed in the dark. Master Bruce simply smiled, looked up, and said,
Thanks, Clark.
And I heard Batman say as he walked out of sight,
Merry Christmas to all. Well, at least for tonight.
I hope you're having a terrific holiday season, and may that continue as we enter 2017. Next week, I'll be back to kick off that new year with a new interview with another great comics creator. So be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.